You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Well, welcome in. One more crazy episode here, MLB.com Extras, American League West edition. Astros, Rangers, and suddenly the Angels in a three-team race for this division title in the final week. Oakland suddenly going to Barry Zito seemingly every day. Seattle Mariners get their new general manager. That and more on MLB.com Extras, American League West edition. Here we go, final week, and the team in Seattle and then finishes at Arizona, a game and a half back after a real good finish in that Rangers series. Of course, the Angels right on their heels as well. I'm not sure who I'm supposed to be watching. Who am I concerned with right now?
Well, you're sort of like a driver. You got to look ahead of you, and you got to check your rearview mirror as well, because traffic is coming hot and heavy on both sides, and all of a sudden the Rangers are pretty close, and the Twins are closer than they appear. So it looks like it's going to go right down to the wire. And, you know, the Angels have really turned it on, and they had a six-game winning streak here, and then the Astros and Twins both had won three games in a row entering Tuesday, and meanwhile the Rangers are stumbling a little bit and falling back to the pack. So, you know, I think we all got the sense about 6 weeks ago that this could go down to the wire, and, you know, I think we'll go into that final Sunday with different scenarios. I'd be shocked if the Astros had anything clinched or were eliminated going into the final day of the season.
Yeah, amazing. And really, to me, I don't know, you've got a better feel for this, but the game on Saturday against the Rangers, it was an absolute must win. The deficit was 4.5 going in. You don't win that one, I think it's pretty much curtains on the division. Not only did they win it, but they win again on Sunday. Now suddenly the Rangers are drifting. It seems to me that Saturday might be that big pivot point.
Yeah, I think it was. And, you know, we've had two or three of these games at this point of the season where I thought, boy, that was a huge one. If they didn't win that, I think they would have been in trouble. Beginning with a couple of weeks ago, the game in Anaheim where they scored five runs after two outs. And that looms big now because the Angels are half a game behind them, and they don't win that. Now they're chasing the Angels. And then there was another game, I can't remember exactly, but they were trailing, and Gattis hit a three-run home run, and they took the lead. And, boy, you think, boy, that could be the swing to save the season. And then, you know, you mentioned the Rangers game on Saturday. So that's what this time of year is like, and I suspect we're going to have a couple of more of those moments in the last couple of days. And we kind of had one on Monday night in Seattle with Chris Carter hitting the seventh-inning home run to break a tie, and that was enough to get the win. And like we said earlier, with the Twins and the Angels winning like they are seemingly every night now, that was huge because had they not won that, they'd be looking up at one of those teams.
There are always a number of little storylines that follow one player or another specific to this time of year. But one that I'd like to ask you about is, Chris Carter. They've been so patient with him. There have been so many times I know fans have been, you know, just begging for them to make some sort of change. You can't take the average, the strikeouts, whatever the case. And it seems as if that patience may be paying off at a pretty critical time. He seems to have found it all of a sudden.
Yeah, he has, and it's pretty amazing. He looks like the Chris Carter we saw for that two-month stretch last year when he played like an MVP candidate, and that's kind of what the Astros had hoped he would do this year, and it just never happened. Season just dragged on and it wasn't there. And then, you know, going into August, he really was taken out of the lineup and he wasn't getting any at bats at all. And they had a big run here the last couple of weeks of left-handed starters. And so that kind of limits what they can do at first base. Cause Valbuena, they don't want him in there against lefties. And then, Marwin doesn't hit lefties as well. So Carter's getting some starts and lo and behold, here he is, homered in three consecutive games and he's homered in five consecutive starts. So, And he comes at just a great time. I know everyone's ready to write Chris Carter off, and you know I probably was at the head of that table as well. I thought I had seen enough, but the guy's got tremendous raw power, and when he puts the bat in the ball and gets on a groove, he can really change games. And if he can keep this up over the last five games, the Astros will get in the playoffs. Because having Chris Carter hitting sixth, seventh in your lineup and hitting a home run every night, that's going to be pretty dangerous.
No, it makes a huge, huge difference. Of course, you know, while they have not enjoyed a lot of success on the road, it helps that they're playing at Seattle to begin this trip. They've had just good success against the Mariners this year. But then this trip ends, and here we go. We knew this was going to happen at some point or another with this interleague play setup that this season is going to end with the Astros playing National League games in Arizona. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It's just really unfortunate, the timing, because the meaning that's going to be placed on those games, and you got to figure that's going to limit their availability or ability to use Evan Gattis, right? And that's kind of a big guy to take out of the equation at such an important time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they do the schedules, but obviously there has to be an interleague series at every point during the year, just because we have 15 teams in each league, so two of those teams have to play each other. And I got to think that they thought, well, hey, we'll put the Astros and D-backs at the end of the year. Nothing will be on the line there. And lo and behold, here we are. That's huge three games for the Astros. And, yeah, Evan Gattis leads them in RBIs, and it's not even close. He has 25 RBIs, more than any other player. I think he has 87 here as we speak. And so, you know, they go to Arizona, the DH, of course. Gattis is the DH. They can't put him in the lineup. But what about left field? Well, that's a big outfield to put him in, and I don't think they would feel comfortable putting him in that outfield, and it's hard to blame him. Gattis used to be a catcher, hasn't caught all year. That's not an option. They haven't tried him first, so it appears right now he won't be in the lineup unless they just want to roll the dice with him in left field. But I guarantee you this, he's going to be used as a pinch hit option at some point. With the game on the line, and he can obviously, just like Carter, can change the swing with one game on the line. But yeah, it kind of stinks for the Astros to be in this position where they have to take their biggest RBI bat out of the lineup. But you know, Marisnik's come in and he's done a pretty good job. They do have some versatility in the outfield with Tucker and Rasmus, and then you have Springer and Wright. So they can put some guys in there who can perform, but they certainly would like to have Gattis in there the last three games.
DR, you know, listen to an interesting weekend in Houston, take the opener, but the Astros came back for two critical games for them, and that's what it is. To me, it's the loss to the Tigers in the opener at home that right now sort of, I don't know, feels more impactful, almost like it hurts more.
I think the one that hurt is Saturday when they had a 4-1 lead on the Astros, and with Derek Holland on the mound, and they couldn't hold it. Derek could been hit by a line drive in the first inning, didn't have a real good feel for his pitches, and I think that kind of hurt the Rangers there. But, you know, if they win that game, I think they really put the Astros, you know, in an almost back-to-the-wall situation. But, you know, not taking that game after being in a 4-1 lead, I think that kind of, you know, that's the game I think that made it's going to make the final week really interesting.
Well, and it is going to be very interesting now, a game and a half lead. And that's one piece of it. But the other piece is that the Angels suddenly, out of nowhere, are making a run. And the last four games of the year in Texas are going to be against the Angels. And, part of me, TR, says that might be a little bit of an advantage for the Rangers. I know that may sound crazy at first blush, but I just think having that intensity of, you know, a team – defensively still in it, might help keep that edge.
Well, yeah, it's funny, Dave, because everybody was pointing to those two Astros series as the two big series of the season, and now that Angels series may be a winner-take-all down-to-the-wire thing. I mean, we're in a real pennant race here. I mean, you got three teams fighting for two spots. You got to figure one of these teams will probably win the wild card, although nothing's guaranteed in that regard either. But you know, there's definitely a chance that one of these teams is going to be out of the playoffs here at the end of the season. So, you know, this is kind of a winner-take-all week, and the Rangers are fortunately at home, but, you know, it's going to come down to their starting pitching. I mean, their bullpen's good. I mean, they're going to score runs, and, you know, they got to play good defense, and they got to get good starting pitching, and that's going to decide it for them right here, is how well these starters can hold up in the final week.
Well, that's probably a perfect segue into a question about Cole Hamels. You and I are talking here prior to Tuesday night's game against Detroit. Hamels will have that start, and he continues to go out and win for this Rangers team, and sort of underscores the value of a big pickup like Hamels for a team like the Rangers, you know, in a race, and just how valuable a guy like that can be. If he starts and pitches well on Tuesday, does that, you know, is there a shot then that he would then pitch one of those games against Anaheim, I guess he probably would, right?
Yeah, he's down for the last game of the season. The Rangers anticipated that this thing would go down to the wire, so that's why they juggled their rotation. So if that Sunday game against the Angels means something, then Cole Hamels will be on for the Rangers.
So that's huge to have him going there. Do you anticipate any juggling of any sort as we get closer here, depending on whether or not you're talking about a division title or a wild card, or you just leave everything on the table for these next handful of days?
I think he's just got to win the game that night. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do here in the final week. You have no off days. You got your starting five rotation. You're hoping Derek Holland recovers with his finger. There's nothing to do now but just put the team out, your best team out there every night and hope they're good enough.
I've had a feeling in the second half, TR, as watch this play out night after night, that the Rangers' advantage might well be just the experience, the veteran presence of guys like Fielder and Beltre and many others. That doesn't change, right? I mean, the makeup of this team doesn't change relative to the makeup of the Astros or the Angels. After three consecutive losses now, it seems to me like that's where this would rear its head, right? If indeed this is an advantage, then right about now you would see that experience step in.
That's what they're hoping for. I mean, these are three good teams, though. I mean, the Angels have veteran experience too. They've been around in the playoffs a lot. People forget won like 98 games last year, so they have experience as well. The Astros don't have the experience of the other two teams, but they got Dallas Keuchel, they got Colin McHugh, they got Scott Kazmir. I mean, they got a good rotation, so. A great rotation can make up for the lack of experience. The good thing for the Rangers, they're at home. The Mariners are on the road. The Astros are on the road, and the Angels have to come here. So, that's what it's down to right now.
Right. And so I think, on paper, a lot of that stuff would look to favor the Rangers a little bit. But, another piece was Hamilton got out and played a little outfield over the weekend in Houston. What do you make of that? Will we see much more of that, or is it just a function of maybe even that specific outfield where left field is so tiny?
They're trying to get him out there because they believe he could be an impact player, but he's got to be an impact player. I mean, Josh Hamilton, we all know, has been a great player in the past, Dave. But, he's had a lot of injuries this year. He's had to come back from a lot of stuff. And, he's not out there right now playing 100% physical. He's not out there playing at a high level like he has in the past. So, they're trying to get him out there, and they're hoping he'll have an impact. But, at some point you got to wonder, would it be better to go with a guy like Will Venable who's not going to get the ball in the third deck of the stadium, but maybe have a higher on-base percentage, play a little better defense, do some things offensively? It's a tough decision, but right now they're going to hope that Hamilton has any kind of an impact as they go down to the stretch.
This is awesome. I mean, we have this conversation at the beginning of every week. Which team is going to show up? Well, it looks like the right Angels team has showed up at the right time. They are on an incredible run. What is the feeling like right now in that clubhouse?
It's really been very impressive to watch, Dave. I mean, we've talked so much about how the Angels kept putting themselves in a bad situation with August and with critical losses to the Astros. And, the way that they have persevered through off-the-field drama, through injuries to their bullpen, through so much this season. And now you look at them and, heading into Tuesday, they had six games left. They were two games back of the Rangers for the division lead. They were a half game out of the Astros for the second wild card spot. This team just keeps finding ways to win, Dave. And I think Monday's win over the A's, which was their sixth in a row, was so indicative of how everybody just has to step up. I mean, Johnny Giovatella, not necessarily known for his defense, made two outstanding diving plays to his right. DJ Crone, not really all that fast, beat out an infield single, scored on a shallow pop-up. The bullpen is already without Houston Street and Joe Smith. It was also without Mike Marin and Fernando Salas because they had each thrown in three straight games. So their two most inexperienced guys, Cam Bedrosian and Trevor Gott, record the final seven outs of what at that point was a tight game. And David Murphy, who hit the walk-off single against Fernando Abad, that was only his seventh hit against a lefty all year, because all he does is start and see right-handed pitching. And, I mean, it's been really fun to watch. And, you know, they understand that if they're going to do this, if they're going to persevere, everybody's going to have to step up. Everybody's going to have to do a little bit more. And lately, that's what they've been doing.
Well, I mean, yeah, they have. I mean, all these, you know, a couple of walk-off wins the last few nights. You know, a couple more left against Oakland. Then on the road to finish the year at Texas. What do you make of that finishing road trip? That suddenly looms very large and looks quite interesting.
Well, I'll tell you what I make of it, Dave. I'm going into Texas, and I have no idea where I'm going after Texas. I have a reservation for New York in case they have to play the Yankees in the wild card game. I am taking my passport in case I have to go to Toronto for the division series. I'm also prepared to come back home in case they have to face the Twins in some sort of tiebreaker game on Monday. That's what it looks like going in. And, you know, the most amazing thing for the Angels is that they have a chance of winning a division, which we would have never imagined. It obviously took some help from the Rangers, who are in a funk right now. They had lost three in a row going into Tuesday. But, you know, winning the division is always a goal. You never want to settle for the wild card. It looked for a while like the Angels were going to have to settle for the wild card, but they don't really feel like that's making the playoffs. I'll never forget this one image from last season. The Angels clinched the wild card spot, and after the game, they had these special hats that had the postseason logo embroidered on the side, sitting on top of the press conference table. And, you know, Mike Scioscia enters the room, looks at the hats, and kind of shoves it to the side because he didn't feel like they had made the playoffs just because they clinched the wild card. Now, obviously, those were two completely different circumstances. The Angels were on the way to a major league leading 98 wins that year, and they cruised to a division title. But their goal is the division. They've said it for a while. It looked like the odds were stacked against them. But as you mentioned, they finished the season with four games in Texas. They got to finish off the series against the A's. But at the end of the day, they feel like they control their own destiny. And that four-game series in Arlington, that's their playoffs.
It's official. Jerry DePoto, the new general manager, what do we know?
New man, new energy. Just had his introductory press conference, and I would say if you can win a press conference, Jerry DePoto is a good man. He talks well, he presents himself well, and there's very evident why he can come into an ownership group and say I deserve a job and convince them, because he does talk well and present himself well, and when he speaks, it's pretty easy to listen to. So. Yeah, excited. You know, he's got ideas, and he's not hesitant to present them. And he does have an interesting experience right here in the AL West, and that'll be interesting going forward with the Mariners and Angels down the road. It's obviously the former Angels GM now heading the Mariners, and with a good insight into what they do, and coming on board with Seattle with some good ideas of what to do in Seattle. So yeah, well. I'm excited after meeting him first blush, and I can see where he's going to bring a lot of energy to this team.
So I'm very intrigued when you say that a guy presents well, he speaks well. I mean, he impressed. He won the press conference. That's a great way of putting it. What is it? What is it about him? That he's particularly articulate? Is there anything new and innovative per se in what he's presenting to you? What struck you?
Well, that's always a great thing, because you can win a press conference and not change a thing. But he's a bright man. You can tell that, and how that portrays is obviously going to be played down the road. I mean, as he said, and I kind of enjoyed it, he said, I'm going to make mistakes today. I'm going to make mistakes tomorrow. You can count on that. But the key is to minimize those and accentuate the successes. And he's just a likable, bright man with some ideas. And that translates, I think, to his background in both in baseball and scouting and sabermetrics. He was a player as a pitcher. He joined the group Saber, the sabermetrics group. And he said, I've just always been fascinated with the numbers. So that's part of who he is, but that's not all of who he is, which I think is important. You know, he's a baseball guy through and through, and he's gonna make some changes. What can he do? I mean, he talked about some things specific to Seattle that I found interesting. He said, you know, having watched this organization, it needs depth. They need You know, they got the bright stars. They got Robinson Cano and Felix Hernandez. They've got Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager. They got to build around those guys. They need depth so that when something goes wrong, everything doesn't crash and burn. You know, I think we saw that this year with, you know, Fernando Rodney had a tough year. They just didn't have the depth behind him to make some things happen. You know, they got some trouble in the outfield. They haven't had the guys to bring in around them to just succeed. You know, that you need depth, and can you do that in a day, a year, 3 years? I mean, that's a long process. It's part of what building the franchise is all about. But and that's what a general manager is about. They're about, you know, working for today and also down the road. So, and he also talked about specifics to the ballpark, which I find most interesting and most important. This team has one of the best records in baseball over the last 2 years on the road. They've had a team built, you know, that can hit the ball well, but hasn't succeeded in Safeco Field, where they've had worse records than most teams in baseball at home, which is just backwards. You know, you got to win at home, and it's, you know, he says they got to get more athletic, and I fully agree. But I think we talked about that here on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. You know, they just need to be more athletic and be able to play in Safeco Field. It can't just be about waiting for 3-run homers, and that's something that he fully intends to focus on and change. And those are just kind of surface things, but those are things I think fans will be interested in, and certainly I was as well.
Do the Mariners, have they given you an indication of what it is that in particular they liked about it?
About Jerry?
Yeah,
I think all those things. I think, one, that he's well-balanced guy with both the sabermetrics and the scouting background. He's a guy with GM experiences, which was something Kevin Mather talked about right off the bat. He wanted a guy who was ready to step in. You know, they feel they're close. They feel they're close. They didn't want somebody coming in and learning on the job. They want somebody that's been there before and knows, you know, what's going to happen when you get the job and winter meetings approaching and free agency to hit, ready to jump into that market. They didn't want to give away the offseason. They want to be ready. And they like his, I think, inclusiveness. I think there's a sense that there are good people in the organization that just need to be given, you know, room to operate, you know, maybe a chance to develop themselves with less of a heavy-handed approach at the top. And he wants somebody that manages people. And, you know, there's, I think, a sense that's what DePoto is, a strength of his, is bringing other people along with him and firing them up, getting them all together and giving them the power to do their jobs and do it well. And work as a group, and you know, those are big picture things. Time tells if they all come to fruition, but certainly I think that's the thought, that they have the right guy here.
And Jane, let's see, we were so worried whether or not we'd see Barry Zito, and then we were really worried, you know, would we be able to get this Zito Hudson matchup? And indeed, we did. You know, I guess let's start with that. How did that go, and what was the reaction from fans?
Well, it didn't go as planned, I think, for either of them. You know, Hudson didn't even make it out of the second inning. Zito didn't make it out of the third inning. So it was very short-lived, lasted under an hour. But, you know, you take away the results, and it was pretty remarkable to see, just because, I mean, who could have envisioned Tim Hudson and Barry Zito back at the Coliseum more than 15 years after Hudson made his debut there. The fact that, you know, two-thirds of the big three were on the same mound, Mark Mulder was also there, you know, in attendance for that. And it's something that you can't even, you know, dream up. And of course, the script didn't go according to plan. But I think it was just a really cool way for the A's to end their home schedule. You know, it's been a tough season for them, and I think that's just something that, you know, they kind of really needed. And Zito even said, you know, it was kind of closure for them to see everyone back there, because, you know, Hudson and Mulder were traded in, you know, a span of a week back in 2004. And then, of course, Zito left after 06. And, you know, for them to be back on the same stage together, all three of them throughout the first pitch on Sunday, it was just a really special, cool scene. And I think just as special to the fans as it was for the three of them. I mean, you know, I don't know that they appreciated what they had or what they were doing back in the early 2000s. You know, you're young and dumb, and that's when you're at your best, but, you know, through some maturing and over the years, you know, you come to appreciate what was. And I think for them to look back on it and just kind of soak in that moment was really cool. And I think that's, it had to have been, you know, one of the best, if not the best moments of the season for the A's. You know, maybe that speaks a little to, you know, their performance on the field. But I think everyone will remember that day and appreciate it. And it really didn't matter, you know, what they did on the mound. It was just, you know, such a cool story and one we really never, ever saw coming. So for it to line up that way, you know, it was obviously pretty special.
Yeah, and too bad that maybe they couldn't have gone a little deeper, pitched a little more effectively. But to your point, I mean, no, that's not necessarily what it was about, and it's why we were talking for weeks going in, like, geez, it sure would be neat. Just find a way, you know, get Barry Zito out there, give the fans a chance to say goodbye, give him a chance to say goodbye, and now we can't shake it. Zito's going to start every single game for the rest of the season. Now, what? How about that? Now all of a sudden, Zito's, you know, I mean, he's like the stalwart of this rotation.
He is. I mean, he's going to start Wednesday against the Angels. And I know there's some chatter around the league, you know, about how contending teams shouldn't be happy that the A's are starting Zito against the Angels. But they don't know how badly the rotation, you know, is reeling right now. And they have no healthy starters from their opening day rotation. Sonny Gray's been shut down. It's like Zito's starting in his place tomorrow. He's just got some hip soreness. And I feel like with one more start, it's just not worth it to push him through that start. And then you've got, you know, your only other options for that Wednesday start would have been Aaron Brooks or Cody Martin on short rest. And then you know, you look, it's such a patchwork rotation right now. And the A's really are out of options. You look at what Zito did, too, in AAA. I mean, he deserved this. He earned this. And he's, you know, more amped up for this start, you know, than anyone is for any start these days, just because, you know, he kind of figured that his Saturday outing would probably be the last start of his career. And so when Melvin approached him, you know, about starting Wednesday, I mean, he was fired up for it. He's got some motivation just because he knows that now this will be his last big league start, you know, against the team that he made his debut against in 2000. And so that's, you know, that's special for him. And, you know, he will be able to go up to about 70 pitches. So maybe we'll get to see, you know, 5 innings out of him, which would be, you know, these days 5 innings is a lot for the A's. If they can get 5 innings out of their starter, they're in good shape. The bullpen's really been put to use here in this last month. The starters have an ERA north of 8, which is just crazy. And it speaks to, you know, how badly things have gone for the rotation with injuries and everything. So this isn't, you know, just a stunt for them. I mean, they actually need him in the rotation. So I think everyone, of course, is hoping he does well for several reasons, but it will be cool to see him on the mound, probably for the last time, because it does sound like he is nearing retirement.
So there you have it. Hang on tight, folks. Going to be a fun finish, and check in again with us. MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition.